Welcome back to Kenai Garden Talk on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman. If eggs or meat or just pets with personality are on your agenda this spring, consider poultry. Sierra Reynolds, Trudy Davis, and Diana Taplin from Cadre Feed shared some tips at the Soldotna Library on Thursday night for getting set up with chickens, ducks, and turkeys.
Getting ready to set up, if you've placed your order for birds, you want everything to be set up in your home. When you bring the babies home, you don't want to bring them in your car and go grocery shopping. You want to be prepared to come get your babies, keep them warm in the car, take them right home, and put them right into the facility that you've prepared for them. And so you need to think about a drafty door, putting them in a greenhouse, but they've got a heat lamp on them. All of these things play into part, and the best thing to do is have them be in a safe place in the home away from drafts. And then on the second note, some of our big windows right now facing south can get very, very hot during the day. And so with a heat lamp on there, maybe you went to work, you want to make sure that the box is either big enough to get away from the heat and or cover that window or something.
Have your heat lamp on a string so you can raise it or lower it according to the needs of the chicken. Mm-hmm. We sell 250-watt infrared bulbs. They don't make incandescent ones anymore, and they are not enough heat in a lot of temperature. So the 250-watt puts out a lot of heat. So if you have a little tiny box, then you have that thing really low. You're going to cook them.
In a hurry when they're that tiny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said big box. Big enough so they can get away from the heat. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can even add a little tiny, like if this is your box, and you can even take a little tiny piece of cardboard and add just a little bit of shade for them to go under.
Too drafty, they're all away from whatever way the wind is blowing. So if they're all bunched up and huddled together, no matter where they are, they're probably really cold. Cold means they're screaming, they're piled up on each other just trying to stay warm. If they're making a horrible lot of noise, they're probably cold.
There's a problem.
Get that lamp down there and close the doors. And if they're just right, they're going to be moseying around, just a pecking and a peeping. And
when they're unhappy, though, it's a vivid pop, peep. You know, they're loud and shrill.
My thing is, the thermometer tells you the temperature. It does not tell you if the chicken is happy. The chicken will tell you if it's comfortable. And if it happens to be the temperature that the book says, well, you're lucky. The thermometer will tell you you got 90 degrees, but if you've got a draft in the room, the thermometer's not going to measure a draft. The chickens will measure the draft and tell you that they need to have help. So you can have a thermometer, and it's good information, but the chickens will tell you what they need. Food, water, and heat makes a healthy chicken. The heat also, besides the danger of getting too cold, also affects the growth rate. So we have had the 5-stack brooders, and we've had the same chickens, the same breed of chicken that come in on the same day, and we've had some in the bottom row and some in the top row. You understand that heat rises, so the top tray is going to be warmer than the bottom tray when all the wind comes in from the door and puts a draft on there, and then heat rises, so the chickens on the top are warmer. The shocking thing is that if they all get the same food, the same age, the same chickens, the only difference is the heat. The ones in the top are always bigger. So if you're raising, say, meat birds, and you want to get the most out of your birds, keep them warmer. Don't let them get so cold if they're starting to look for that lamp. That way they'll have better efficiency with their feed, because what they take in is helping them to grow rather than just maintain life. Some people want to know about shavings.
Shavings, our favorite is straw.
I personally think that little chickens that are still getting the idea of what to peck at, because they don't have a mom to show them what's what. They don't, the mother hen is gone. So they're going to be picking at those little things of shavings and maybe eating some of them. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'd prefer them to have straw, because it's not going to pack them up in there. When they're older, they are smarter by then. They know what's food and what isn't.
Straw does have little seeds, though. It does give them something to do if it's winter and, you know, cabin fever sets in and things like that, but gives them something to do. We get turkeys in and love the turkeys. They are full of character, and they're fun, and they're comical, and
social.
Yes, they're social, and they're not dumb. They need to be cared for properly, but I think they're a real joy to have. To me, when I'm caring for them, they like change in small moderations, whereas I think your chickens at times can be more adaptable. They'll start to feather out about 4 weeks, and the coop's good, and turkeys, I would go, okay, is everything just right for them before I moved them and make sure they were strong. We have ducks and geese as well, and a lot of people will ask, well, can I put ducks and geese with my chickens? They need to be able, when they're brand new babies, they don't have any oil in their feathering yet. That's going to come as they develop and get their mature feathers. But every day they need to have access to rinse their little eyes in water.
They duck their face automatically, and if you don't have enough water for them, it's harder for them to keep healthy in their eyes. Mm-hmm. The main thing is that ducks are messy. Mm-hmm. They drink a lot of water. They spit it all around. They make wet spots on the floor with stuff. And that's if for keeping your chickens clean, you don't want to keep them with ducks.
I think adjacent somehow, if you wanted both, you could, if you had the ability to split a coop and put some on one side and some on the other.
I think chickens need a tad more heat as well.
Mm-hmm. The ducks, I think, would be comfortable almost with a little lean-to and some straw, and they'd nestle right in there. All of the birds, really, the ducks, and they even become bonded as they've been in a box together, believe it or not. Chickens bond, so for one thing, if you've got existing chickens and you bring in new ones, because you like to rotate new ones coming in, and you're getting ready to take your new babies that are about a month old or so, depending on how our spring is, and introduce them into your coop. Very seldom is it successful to just take your brand new babies and put them in with the older girls. Even when I have babies brand new and I tried to mix them from one tray to another or something, they all look, And so prepare ahead of time and maybe put a divider in so they can see each other first and go, okay, I'll accept you a little bit. And same with ducks and geese. They need camaraderie. They need to be a flock.
You don't just want one chicken or one duck.
No.
And if you have bigger birds, like you've had them a while and somebody gives you a new chicken, you introduce that one at night so they wake up and it's just there. It's not something that happens.
That they got to go, chase it all around. You just slip it in and put it on the perch next to somebody if you can. And then they go, I guess I had a dream. Got a new chicken something.
Thanks to the ladies from Cadre Feed for sharing their knowledge. There's a lot of that this time of year, including a local pest expert hoping to arm gardeners with knowledge of an invasive insect that might be making its slimy way to the central Kenai Peninsula. Stay tuned to find out more. Welcome back to Kenai Garden Talk. On KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, I'm Jenny Nyman. Gardeners have a couple things in common. Among them, a lack of free time in the spring, summer, and fall, at least one set of dirt-stained work clothes, and a familiarity with common pests. Janice Chumley, who works in integrated pest management for the Cooperative Extension Service, gave a presentation at the Central Peninsula Garden Club's February meeting.
No matter what it is that you grow, whether you're growing trees or if you're growing fruits or vegetables, lawn, it doesn't matter, you will have some kind of problem. And that's just life. I mean, we share the planet with a whole lot of other creatures. They are interested in eating the same things that we are many times. And so you need to become familiar with a lot of the pests. And I'm sure that every single person in this room who has gardened for any amount of time has seen a number of these.
Slugs, root maggots, aphids, and cutworms are all common sights in gardens on the Kenai Peninsula.
We've all learned how to deal with a lot of these critters. We can rotate our crops, we can use beneficial insects, we can use safer soaps, there's many, many things that everybody has tried and been successful with, or perhaps not been successful, depending on the year. My role as a person with the IPM program is to raise your tolerance. If you are growing things, you need to understand that you will have a certain amount of crop loss. There is no such thing as a insect-free growing area. That's in a magazine. It doesn't exist in reality.
Part of what integrated pest management teaches is a little tolerance for garden pests, because there's just no guaranteed consistent solution to control them. Conditions some years can lead to greater infestations. That has certainly been the case with slugs.
I'll bet you that after last winter, or last fall, everybody in this room had slugs. And if you didn't, you probably live in a concrete place with nothing to eat. It was very wet. It was a great year for slugs. There was many, many slug eggs laid. They reproduced in copious quantities, which will tell you that this spring, because we have had a fairly mild winter, we had a lot of snow cover, that all of those slug eggs, unless you tried to dispose of them last fall when they were being laid, will hatch. They will turn into very small little slugs. You won't notice them until later on in the summer when they're eating everything. So the trick with that is to start early, you know, trap often. Side note here, okay? I participated in a webinar on slugs with this guy who is from Ireland, and he's a slug expert in the world. And he gave this great webinar. And the take-home that I got from this webinar on slug control is that they're more attractive to cucumbers than anything. So save the beer for yourself. Don't bother to waste it on the slugs. Cucumbers are attracted to slugs on a regular basis. And so you can go ahead and put cucumber slices in those things that you would use for beer bags, and it will attract them. You can just then dispose of the slug from there. You always want to remember to place those traps away from your garden. You're not inviting them into the garden. You're wanting them to get out of the garden. But he says, and this is the expert in the world, saying cucumbers. So I'm just saying. Slugs come in many colors. Slugs in the same family have many different colorations. They're different sizes always. So when you see a slug and you think, oh, I've never seen that color before, or I've never seen that slug before, it must be new and invasive. I hate to say it, but you're probably wrong. I deal with a lot of slugs. I deal with a lot of people with slugs. But this year, I had the pleasure of talking with someone in Seward, and she was out walking her dog. This is in downtown Seward. This is not in a real green leafy area, but this is in downtown Seward on 3rd and about Jefferson, say close to the Sea Life Center. And she found a slug, and she was really curious about it due to its size. Took some pictures, you know, asked me about it. I got a hold of the Division of Agriculture as well. We took samples of this and sent it off to a malacologist, which is truly the only way to positively identify slugs is through their genitalia. So sent it to a malacologist and got a positive ID on this. And this slug is a leopard slug. It's called Limus maximus. And maximus, doesn't it kind of tell you how big it's going to get? It's like, at the end of the season, in talking to Carol, I am sad to report that there were 24 slugs caught. And that means undoubtedly that there is a breeding population of leopard slugs in Seward. Seward's not a real, I mean, it's wet, but it's very rocky. It's not a real slug popular place. No one knows how it got there. No one knows how it was transported there. The interesting thing is the only other sighting of this slug in Stable Alaska was from Ketchikan up until this past year. It's now in Seward. Seward's just on the other side of the mountains from us. So what I'm asking all of you is to become first detectors and to keep your eye out for a slug like this. This slug is extremely large, even when it first hatches out. It can grow up to 10 inches in length. You know, when you go to see it, it will probably be about 3 to 4 inches. It's very wide. It has an extremely broad range of plants hosts that it likes to consume. So if it's going to show up, you'll undoubtedly see it. I'd like for everybody to put it on their radar to keep an eye out for. This is something that once it's established here, you can see how well their native slugs do. You can imagine the amount of damage a slug this size is going to do. So keep an eye out. If you do find one, please take a picture and kill it. Then report it. You don't have to save it. You don't have to, you know, make a pet of it or you know, just take a picture and then walk off and say, oh, I'll get back to it. Slugs have the ability, if there is not another slug in the area, slugs reproduce on their own. They can fertilize their own eggs, so they're slightly hermaphroditic, and so they don't have a lot of diverse genetic material, but if there's no other slug in the area, they will fertilize their own eggs and lay them. So don't just leave it sit, pick it up, dispose of it, wear gloves. If you know, if it grosses you out, use a stick or tongs or other things that you might have available to you. But take a picture, please, and submit it.
If you want to get a look at these things, Seward City News has pictures on its website from Carol Griswold, who first reported the sightings in Seward. Chumley is hoping to recruit local gardeners to become first detectors who will let the Cooperative Extension Service know if the leopard slugs make it across the mountains. Chumley also asks gardeners to keep an eye out for another destructive invasive insect that has been making inroads to Alaska.
The other thing that I would really like people to be aware of is in the state of Alaska, we have tracked for gypsy moths, which is a huge problem for forests across the United States. They were inadvertently introduced in the late 1800s on the East Coast. They have spread since then. And this past year in the state of Washington, which also we hang up traps for them in state here, in the state of Washington, they got hung up traps. And this past year they found actual females typically do not fly from this, only males fly. And they found flying females this year in Washington state. We have had some moth activity in the state coming in that has been caught by the CAPS program, which is the folks that protect your borders, whether they're ship inspections or it's kind of like border patrol for insects. And so they have found some actual Asian gypsy moths and egg masses coming up into the state. And those were found on ships. Those masses were destroyed. Gypsy moths have been found twice in state, up in Fairbanks by one of the bases up there, because they can get transported as egg masses fairly easy. I'd like everybody to keep an eye out for these things as well. And if you think that you have found something like that, it needs to be taken a picture of, destroyed, and reported, please.
The Cooperative Extension Service has a link on its integrated pest management page to a portal for submitting sightings of invasive plants, insects, and diseases. Visit uaf.edu/ces/IPM and you'll see the link at the top of the page.
Where was it found? What was it found on? Do you have a picture? Sometimes it asks for latitude, longitude. You don't have to get that detailed, but it helps to have a clear picture, a picture that shows size by having some comparison in it. If you just hold something up real close to a little thing, it looks huge, and without any kind of comparison, you're not real sure. So if you could take a decent photo that has comparison, it would be very beneficial.
If you're into technology in gardening, the Cooperative Extension Service also has a Weed ID app.
We all like to think, what is this plant? I've never seen it before. Is it a native plant? Is it a rare plant? Is it an invasive plant or just an obnoxious plant? But you can now take photos of it and you can get a response to tell you what this is. There are many of these that are already cataloged that you can compare to online on your, right there on your iPhone, your cell phone. It'll show you what the actual weed is, or you can then report it through this web portal. And so if you're really into plants and bugs and finding out what things are, Extension through this pest portal also has classes that you can take. Some of them you'll see are pesticide applicator training. The last one for the year is coming up, April 3rd, 4th, and 5th, if you're interested in taking the pesticide applicator training. not, this also just has a lot of good information. Some of it is you have to pay for, a lot of it you don't, but it talks about bird bench, aphids in trees, exotic forest pests or chalkweed, spruce beetles and white sweet clover. The other thing that I'm going to be here to talk to you about, which I don't need you to report, but I would like you to be aware of, is the fact that I'm saying the collective South Central Alaska, now has a very high population of spruce bark beetle again. So don't be surprised when your trees start turning rust colored and the needles falling off. There's a lot of bark beetle activity going on. So if you do buy things like firewood, you're going to want to either burn it immediately or check to make sure that you are not importing spruce bark beetle with that wood into your area that may or may not have bark beetle. Just a heads up.
The Integrated Pest Management page has links to articles, pamphlets, pictures, advice, and all kinds of other information on insects and diseases, invasive plants, and tree health. The local Cooperative Extension Service office has resources too. They're on Kalifornsky Beach Road in the Fish and Game Building, open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays.
My takeaway is there's really no need to panic. No matter what I just said about all these new and creepy critters showing up, we share the planet with a lot of things. And sometimes we have to raise our tolerance levels to understand that there are years where there's high populations of some things and then it falls off the charts in other years. And so if you find something that is really unusual, something that you don't know about, please feel free to report it. Extension is there. Come on by, send a picture. That's what we're there for. We're happy to work with you.
Once again, that website is uaf.edu/ces/IPM. The Cooperative Extension Service is offering free Learning for Life classes from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Tuesdays starting next month, including one on seed starting for gardens and container gardens on April 17th. There's also classes on basic car care on April 3rd, menu planning on April 10th, canning basics on April 24th, and preventing garden pests on May 1st. All classes are held at the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank. Opportunities for learning are sprouting up all over the place this spring. Today, until 2 p.m., the Central Peninsula Garden Club has its annual Gardening Roundtables event at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center. It's free and open to the public. Stop in anytime and visit with local experts on a wide range of topics, including seed starting, perennials, berries, compost, irrigation, square foot gardening, fermentation, grow buckets, high tunnels, garlic, food safety, and useful tools. Head to the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center by 2 p.m. And you can find more information on the club at senpengardenclub.org. Tomorrow, March 25th, Sarah Souders with Sarah's Alaska Honey is teaching a beginning beekeeping class in Cooper Landing from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Cooper Landing Community Hall. It's $20 per person or $30 per couple. To register, call Yvette at 907-230-3055. Alaska food blogger Maya Wilson, from right here on the Kenai Peninsula, will give a book talk and cooking demonstration from 4 to 6 p.m. March 30th at the Denina Wellness Center in Kenai. She'll sign copies of her new book, The Alaska From Scratch Cookbook, and make one of her favorite recipes, blackened salmon lettuce wraps with mango salsa and avocado cream. The event is free and open to the public. O'Brien Garden and Trees is offering a fruit tree workshop from 2 to 4 p.m. March 31st at the farm on Frida Drive in Nikiski. Mike O'Brien has 30 years experience growing fruit trees in Alaska and will share information on getting started, what varieties to choose, how to care for your plants, growing in a high tunnel, site prep, common pests, pruning, grafting, and more. The cost is $60. Call 776-8726 to reserve a spot. Kenai Local Food Connections' next monthly meeting is from noon to 1 p.m. April 9th at the Kenai Peninsula College Library. Newcomers are welcome. They'll discuss ideas for Harvest Moon Local Food Festival and other local food projects. Alaska Food Hub vendor training and a season's review is happening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. April 12th at the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association building on K Beach Road. Learn how to become a Kenai Food Hub vendor, find out how the first two seasons went, and review how to use the online marketplace. The Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District is holding a farmers market meetup from 9 a.m. to noon, April 13th, at the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association building. If you're a successful gardener thinking about becoming a farmers market vendor, or if you already sell at the market and want to learn new tips of the trade, this free event is for you. With information on Kenai Peninsula markets, planning, marketing, food safety, Alaska's cottage food law, and more. And that will do it for Kenai Garden Talk. Join us next month, April 20th, at 11 a.m. In the meantime, you can find a podcast version of this show and all our past episodes on the Kenai Garden Talk page on kdll.org. We're going to leave with a Greek proverb. A society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they shall never sit in. And a Chinese proverb while we're at it. All gardeners know better than other gardeners. I'm Jenny Nyman. Thanks for tuning in.